The altar of opacity, a views on the perception of priests' deaths. This week, we confront how abuse and secrecy have reshaped the way we perceive the deaths of Catholic priests. It examines the shifting public perception of Catholic priests, especially in the wake of sexual abuse scandals and recent priest deaths in Mexico, Brazil, France, and a rather old case from the 80s in the United States. The piece follows these cases to illustrate how the Catholic Church historical tendency towards secrecy or opacity is increasingly untenable and damaging, especially when confronted with abuse allegations and the erosion of trust among its own faithful. Historically, the murder of a priest in Latin America or Eastern Europe was often interpreted as a politically motivated act. Victims of authoritarian regimes or military or paramilitary violence. Examples such as that of Argentine priest Carlos Mujica Echagüe, who was murdered in 1974, Salvadoran bishop, now a saint of his church, Oscar Arnulfo Romero, who was assassinated in his own cathedral back in 1980, or Polish priest Jerzy Popieluszko, who was assassinated back in 1984, are examples of how, in those cases, all of them were seen as martyrs. Their deaths rallying communities, becoming the symbols of resistance. In contrast, recent deaths of priests, two in Mexico, one in Brazil, and one in France, are shrouded in ambiguity. The motives are less clear, and the context is complicated by the ongoing sexual abuse crisis within the church. Mexican priests Bertoldo Pantaleon Estrada and Ernesto Hernandez Vilchis, Brazilian priest Alexandro da Silva Lima, and French priest Jean-Marie Petitclerc died over the last 2 months. While Bertoldo Pantaleon Estrada and Alexandro da Silva Lima's deaths appear to be the result of violent crime or robbery, Petitclerc's and Hernandez's deaths force us to wonder what actually happened with them. Petitclerc committed suicide after being accused and found guilty of a sexual offense. Hernandez's case is marred by doubts about what actually happened before his death. Hernandez's murder in Mexico City is complicated by his association. It is unclear how deep or how old was that association with a sex worker, and the rapid pace of the investigation, which contrasts with the slow handling of other cases. Very close to where Hernandez was assassinated, there is a cold case of the assassination of a priest, a judicial vicar, to be more precise, in the neighboring diocese of Izcalli, going back to 2019. So there are doubts about why in this case with Hernandez there is this rather speedy process, while in this other case from back in 2019, there is no advance for the last 6 years or so. Petitclerc's death, the French priest, is particularly significant. He was, by all accounts, a national figure, but also because he was found dead shortly after being convicted of voyeurism involving a minor. The church response, especially that of his superior, Father Xavier Ernest, the superior of the Salesians of St. John Bosco in France, seemingly was aimed at a quick closing of the matter, attributing his death to the Atlantic Ocean as to discourage any further inquiry. However, authorities conducted an autopsy and ruled his death a suicide, highlighting the tension between institutional opacity and the need for public accountability. And then there is a case from 1988 unearthed recently by Jason Berry reporting on the murder of Patrick McCarthy, a priest and an abuser, by two of his victims. This case and the sympathy it evokes nowadays for the perpetrators underscores the profound loss of trust in the church's ability to protect the most vulnerable. The central theme then is that of erosion of trust in the Catholic Church, not only among the general public, but even among devout Catholics. The Church's historical approach, that of protecting its reputation and clergy at the expense of victims, has led to what is now a crisis of credibility. A key to understand how these and other cases of murdered or suicidal priests is the Catholic Church's extreme reliance on the so-called 3D approach when confronted with sexual abuse cases. These three D's are deflect, dismiss, and deny. Social media debates following Petit Clerc's death, particularly posts by French priests living in Turkey, Philippe de Kergolay, reveal ongoing resistance within the clergy to endorse and accept the consequences of genuine accountability, and a certain appetite for the return of these 3D approach, the deflect, dismiss, and deny approach. The Kergolay defense of Petit Clerc and critique of zero tolerance policies exemplify a nostalgia of opacity, arguing that accused priests are unfairly grilled by public opinion and media, and because of that, they are denied mercy. The Kergolay position is misleading on two main issues. On the one hand, the toxic legacy of over a century of managing clergy sexual abuse with opaque procedures. The Kergolay nostalgia for a time when accusations were handled discreetly ignores the fact that the church opacity has been a deliberate policy for over a century. Early 20th century rules institutionalized secrecy, prioritizing the protection of priests and the church's reputation over justice for victims. And that decision had consequences that we can see nowadays. It is not as if the church never played the circling the wagons game. Quite the opposite. It was the standard operating procedure. As hard as it could be to admit it, the Holy Inquisition had more accountable practices than those that shaped the pontificates of John Paul II and Benedict XVI, aiming at silencing the victims, dismissing the scale of the crisis and blaming external factors as the key for the solution, the alleged solution to the crisis. The 3Ds strategy, the deflect, dismiss, and deny strategy, further during the Cold War, was justified as a tool to protect the church from external threat, but ultimately offered shield to predators while perpetrating harm and eroding trust in the hierarchy. Returning to opacity will only exacerbate the crisis, further eroding trust, and even worse, enabling more abuse towards the faithful. But the Kergorlei argument is also deeply flawed from a theological perspective. He claims that the church's response to abuse allegations is more ruthless than that of civil criminal justice, punishing priests before any formal investigation and denying them mercy. He then likens the church's approach to his faulty understanding of Islamic law. He goes as far as to use Muslim as a derogatory term. Most importantly, the Kergorlei dismisses entire gospel passages that speak directly to the issue of a scandal and the abuse of the vulnerable. This is something that the piece does not pursue as deeply as it should do, mostly because of time and space considerations. But you can connect the dots on that issue. I'm only adding this small bit here over the spoken summary as to highlight that there is a very deep contradiction there that the Kergorlei is dismissing completely. It must be clear that by ignoring these teachings, the Kergorlei theology fails to account for the church responsibility to protect the vulnerable. The Kergorlei defense of accused priest is not only historically and theologically unsound, but also internally contradictory. He praises secular institutions for their discretion in handling accusations, yet fails to acknowledge that the church's lack of transparency has been a root cause of the crisis. Furthermore, he claims that dozens of priests have died due to overzealous enforcement without providing any evidence. He even says that in some cases, priests are pretty much forced into suicide by this overzealous approach, while in actuality, what has happened is that some suicidal priests have been identified as abusers, as predators, by their victims. The story situates the current crisis within a broader historical and social context. It highlights the role of institutional secrecy in enabling abuse and the need for genuine accountability. It references a case from Argentina where powerful clergy networks protected at least one predator who ultimately committed suicide, of all places, at the offices of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of La Plata. More contradictory, unlike the Kergorlei notion of suicide as evidence of being a victim, there is precedent, at least in the countries following the so-called common law, that the suicide of accused individuals is evidence of guilt, a principle ignored by those advocating for the return of opacity. The story also discusses the impact of the crisis in the church's moral authority and its ability to serve as a social and religious leader. Trust in the church has declined sharply, as documented by surveys in Latin America, North America, and Europe. Ultimately, the piece argues that attempts to return to opacity, such as those advocated by the Kergorlei, are not only futile but dangerous. If successful, they will only perpetuate harm, undermine trust, and contradict both historical precedent and core theological teachings. The church loss of moral authority is a direct result of its failure to address abuse transparently and justly. The peace calls for better approaches, emphasizing transparency, accountability, and a commitment to protecting the vulnerable as essential for the church's future. If you found these stories and reflections compelling, I encourage you to read the full piece. There you will discover deeper context, direct voices, and further analysis of the church's evolving response to abuse and the shift in perception of priestly deaths. The written piece offers richer detail and links, connection that invite you, the reader, to draw your own conclusions and engage with the complexities at the heart of this ongoing crisis of clergy sexual abuse. Well, you know where you can find me. I am at Twitter, Sky Blue, and Facebook. You can find me as Rodolfo Soriano Núñez or in any of these three social media. I hope you keep reading and hearing us, and we will be here next week. Thank you.